भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 1 चैप्टर 7 द सन ऑफ द्रोण पनिश टेक्स्ट नंबर 12 Parikshitota Raja Sher
Parikshitota Raja Sher
Janma Karma Vilapanam
Janma Karma Vilapanam
Samstam Cha Panduputranam
Samstam Cha Panduputranam
Vakshe Kat Krishna Katodayam
Vakshe Krishna Katodayam
Parikshita
Parikshita
Of King Parikshit
Of King Parikshit
Ata
Ata
Thus Raja Shay of the king who is the Rishi among the kings.
The king who is the Rishi among the kings.
Janma,
birth.
Karma,
activities.
Vilapanam,
deliverance.
Samstam,
renunciation of the world.
Cha,
and.
Panduputranam,
Panduputranam
of the sons of Pandu.
Sons of Pandu.
Vakshe,
I shall speak.
Krishna Katha Udayam.
Udayam.
That which gives rise to the transcendental narrations of Krishna.
That which gives rise to the transcendental narrations of Krishna.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Suti Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics of His birth, activities, and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage amongst kings. As well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. Please repeat. Suti Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka.
Suti Goswami thus addressed the rishis headed by Shonaka.
Now I shall begin the transcendental narration.
Now I shall begin the transcendental narration
of the Lord Sri Krishna.
Of the Lord Sri Krishna.
And topics of the birth, activities, and deliverance of King Parikshit.
The sage amongst
kings,
as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu.
Purport. Lord Krishna is so kind to the fallen souls that he personally incarnates himself amongst the different kinds of living entities and takes part with them in daily activities. Any historical fact, old or new, which has a connection with the activities of the Lord is to be understood as a transcendental narration of the Lord. Without Krishna, all the supplementary literatures like the Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories or historical facts. But with Krishna, they become transcendental. And when we hear of them, we at once become transcendentally related to the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Purana, but the special significance of this Purana is that the activities of the Lord are central and not just supplementary historical facts. Srimad Bhagavatam is thus recommended by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the spotless Purana. There is a class of less intelligent devotees of the Bhagavat Purana who desire to relish at once the activities of the Lord narrated in the 10th canto without first understanding the primary cantos. They are under the false impression that the other cantos are not concerned with Krishna, and thus more foolishly than intelligently they take to the reading of the 10th canto. These readers are specifically told herein that the other cantos of the Bhagavatam are as important as the 10th canto. No one should try to go into the matters of the 10th canto without having thoroughly understood the purport of the other 9 cantos. Krishna and his pure devotees like the Pandavas are on the same plane. Krishna is not without his devotees of all the rasas and the pure devotees like the Pandavas are not without Krishna. The devotees and Lord are interlinked and they cannot be separated. Therefore, talks about them are all Krishna Katha or topics of the Lord. This begins another section of the Bhagavatam. In the beginning of this chapter, the sages are asking, what did Vyasadeva do after Narada Muni had left? We learn that Vyasadeva sat in meditation and experienced directly the personality of Godhead along with his illusory energy, and he saw the jivas, although they're transcendental because of illusion, of identifying themselves with the material world, had become entrapped by the threefold miseries. But Śrīla Vyāsadeva saw the remedy for the suffering of the living entities, and therefore he compiled the Śrīmad Bhāgavatam. And after compiling the Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, he related a synopsis of the Bhāgavatam to his son, Śukadeva Goswami, who was in the womb of his mother. And right after his birth, at 16 years old, Śukadeva Goswami left, but later on returned and heard the entire Bhagavatam from his father. And now we learn that Śukadeva Goswami, although originally, or at least at that particular time, when he was in the womb of his mother, was an impersonalist, after hearing the Bhagavatam from a pure devotee like Śrīla Vyāsadeva, became a Bhagava, or a devotee of Krishna. And therefore he was eligible to narrate that same Bhagavatam to Pariksha Maharaj, who was fasting until death at the banks of the river Ganges. The narration is being explained by Suta Goswami, who, here we find, because he's relating topics in relation to Krishna, that his topics are transcendental. That just like 1 plus 1 is equal to 2, as Prabhupada once wrote to a Gurukul student. The Gurukul student had sent Prabhupada some mathematical equations that he had learned, and Prabhupada said that you should learn this math. Just like 1 plus 1 is equal to 2, so Krishna plus anywhere is equal to Vrindavan. Therefore, if you always remember Krishna, you'll always be in Vrindavan. That's the most essential mathematical formula that we can learn. That's why math was invented. And the same thing will be explained here, because now the topic that Suta Goswami is explaining to the sages will be about the appearance of Krishna. Thus far in the Bhagavatam, we've not seen Krishna directly. We've only heard about Krishna. It's very significant when we're about to meet someone that we meet him, or when someone wants to introduce themselves or appear before us. For instance, if you want to go to a job interview and meet someone for the first time, you want to make a good impression. You dress nicely, you clean, you bathe nicely, you have walk with a spring in your step, in order to create a good impression. So now we'll meet Krishna for the first time in the Bhagavatam, and Krishna obviously will try to create a good impression. The topics turn to after the battle of Kurukshetra. Duryodhana was killed. Bhima's club smashed him on the thigh below the belt. He was dying. Ashwatthama was incensed that his master was killed in that way, and therefore he attacked the Pandavas' camp at night, thinking that the Pandavas were sleeping in a certain tent. He cut off their heads. Ashwatthama was a Brahmin by birth. His father, Dronacharya, was a Brahmin, but he took up the role of a Kshatriya, which is in the Veda culture, degrading. And he further became degraded because he did not follow the rules of the Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas were supposed to be so brave that if you were about to fight with an enemy and your enemy didn't have a weapon, then you give your enemy a weapon to fight with you. But here, Ashwatthama not only didn't give his enemies a weapon to fight with, but he killed them when they were asleep. Not a very Kshatriya way of fighting. That's modern way of fighting. One devotee is telling me that in Bengal, sometimes the police, they arrest the thieves, the known thieves. And they take them to the forest. And then they say, all right, you can go. So the thieves, they start running away from the... And then the police take their guns and shoot them in the back. That way you save so much money on the trial and you don't have to give testimony. Very quick way of justice. And then the police chief gives everyone a reward for shooting the thieves, claiming that the thieves were running away, but his men bravely shot them. So this is not the Kshatriya spirit. I capture my enemy, I tell him he can go, he starts running away and I shoot him. And then I claim he was running away. Many times we see Krishna fighting with Jambavan, or Jarasandha fighting with Bhima, and they give them a weapon. Not that, all right, you want to fight, you take your gun out and shoot the person. Quick decision. But Ashwatthama degraded himself. He did not follow the rules and regulations of a Kshatriya. He killed the sleeping son of Draupadi. Draupadi had five sons, a son by each one of the Pandavas. And then fled, knowing well that they would not be happy with his activities. First he went to Duryodhana, who was dying. Here it says, when the respective warriors of both camps, namely the Kauravas and the Pandavas, were killed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the dead warriors obtained their desired destination, and when the sons of Dhritarashtra fell down lamenting, his spine broken, being beaten by the club of Bhimasena, the sons of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama, beheaded the five sleeping sons of Draupadi and delivered them as a prize to his master. Foolishly thinking that he would be pleased, Duryodhana, however, disapproved of the heinous act, and he was not pleased in the least. All the soldiers on both sides were killed. Practically the whole dynasty was destroyed at the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of warriors were killed. Duryodhana was the king, and in order to please Duryodhana, Ashwatthama had brought the heads of the five sleeping sons of Draupadi that he had cut off and presented them to Duryodhana as the heads of the Pandavas. But Duryodhana, he took a look at the heads and realized that actually these are not the heads of the Pandavas, these are the heads of his sons, and therefore he was quite disappointed. Although he was a demon, Duryodhana, still he was a real Kshatriya. And he was disappointed that his dynasty, or the dynasty of the Yadus, or the Kurus, the dynasty of the Kurus would not go on, because the sons of the Pandavas were the remaining descendants of the Kurus. He condemned Ashwatthama for his act of killing the sons of Draupadi, and shortly after that he died in disappointment. Then Arjuna, I guess we'll find out probably in the verses here. Draupadi, I'll read the translations. Draupadi, the mother of the five children of the Pandavas, after hearing the massacre of her sons, began to cry in distress with eyes full of tears. Trying to pacify her in great loss, Arjuna spoke to her thus, O gentle lady, when I present you with the heads of that Brahmin, after beheading him with arrows from my Gandiva bow, I shall then wipe the tears from your eyes and pacify you. Then after burning your son's bodies, you can take your bath standing on his head. Arjuna, Draupadi was also a Kshatriya lady, quite a fiery lady. And therefore Arjuna said, I won't even try to pacify you. First, I'll go after the killer of your sons, and then after I get him, I'll cut his head off and I'll bring it back to you. And after we burn the bodies of our sons, then you can, when you're taking your bath for purification, you can stand on your head, on his head, and that time I'll try and pacify you. That's Kshatriya. So then Arjuna, Arjuna is guided by the infallible Lord as friends, so now we're being introduced to Krishna and driver. Krishna first appears in the Bhagavatam as the driver and the friend of Arjuna, not as the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of the universal form, the source of all opulence, the husband of the goddess of fortune, the creator of all planets, spiritual, material. No, he appears as a chariot driver trying to please his friend Arjuna. Thus satisfied the dear lady by his statements, then he dressed in armor and armed himself with furious weapons, and getting into his chariot, he set out to follow Ashvatthama, the son of his martial teacher. Ashvatthama, the murderer of the princes, seeing from a great distance Arjuna coming at him with great speed, fled in his chariot, panic-stricken, just to save his life, as Brahma fled in fear of Shiva. When the son of the Brahmana, Ashvatthama, saw that his horses were tired, he considered that there was no alternative for protection outside of using the ultimate weapon, the Brahmastra, nuclear weapon. Since his life was in danger, he touched water in sanctity and concentrated upon chanting the hymns for throwing nuclear weapons, although he did not know how to withdraw such weapons. So Ashvatthama was in great difficulty at this time. He was about to be killed. And therefore, he decided to throw a Brahmastra weapon, the ultimate weapon, which is compared to the nuclear weapons. But these weapons, they would find their target. You'd name the target, and wherever the target went, the weapon would follow, and it would ultimately destroy it. The general understanding was that if you threw a weapon, you also had to know how to withdraw it. In case you made a mistake, you would have to be able to bring the weapon back. But Ashvatthama had only partially learned how to throw a Brahmastra weapon because he didn't know how to withdraw it. Therefore, theoretically, he wasn't supposed to throw the weapon. But necessity knows no rules and regulations, and therefore he threw it anyhow, just to protect his life, because he didn't see any alternative. Therefore, Ashvatthama was not exactly in a very good mental state. He's compared to a Brahma Bandhu, or a Kshatriya Bandhu, because it is not that simply by taking birth one is a Brahmin or a Kshatriya, but by qualification. He showed he was disqualified by killing the sleeping sons. He dissatisfied his master. He now is not acting properly as a Kshatriya. He's showing himself to be quite disqualified. Thereupon, a glaring light spread in all directions. It was so fierce that Arjuna thought his life in danger, so he began to address Lord Sri Krishna. Arjuna said, "O my Lord Sri Krishna, you are the Almighty Personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only." Being faced with the Brahmastra, Arjuna turned at once to Krishna, and he addressed Krishna that you're unlimited, and you instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. So Arjuna is a devotee; he's his friend. He's in the face with a very difficult situation. Brahmastra is being thrown at him. Brahmastra can't be withdrawn. It always finds its target and destroys it. It's the ultimate weapon. Arjuna has quite a bit of difficulty. Therefore, he turns to Krishna. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creations and is transcendental to material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. So most times, if someone comes with a gun to shoot us, and our friend's standing by, we don't usually offer such elaborate prayers. We say, you know, dear friend, please get the gun, do something, save me. But Arjuna is following the etiquette for a devotee in relation to Krishna and offering very nice prayers before any action is taken. And yet, although you are beyond the purview of the material energy, you execute the four principles of liberation, characterized by religion, and so on for the ultimate good of the conditioned souls. Thus you descend as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and benefit your friends. Arjuna is a friend. He has quite a bit of burden right now. Especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you. So Arjuna is addressing Krishna. My dear Krishna, you've come here to save your friends, and your friend right now, me, I'm in danger, so help. We can translate it. O Lord of Lords, how is it that this dangerous effulgence is spreading all around? Where does it come from? I do not understand it. Arjuna, during the battlefield, many brahmastras were thrown at him, and he had counteract them, but somehow or another, by some arrangement, maybe Krishna's arrangement, Arjuna didn't quite understand what was happening in this instance. Therefore, he addressed his friend Krishna. Supreme Personality of Godhead said, know from me that this is the act of the son of Drona. He has thrown the hymns of nuclear energy, Brahmastra, and he does not know how to retract the glare. He has helplessly done this, being afraid of imminent death. These weapons were sound vibrations. Of course, nowadays we don't take it very seriously. Someone threw sticks and stones may break my bones. Do they say that here around here too? But names will never harm me. There's an expression like that, a refrain in English. They don't have anything like that in Finnish? What do they say in Finnish? What's that? What does that mean?
Blasphemy doesn't make a cut or
wound. Oh, yeah. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but names will never harm me. But if one learns how to chant properly, effectively, then sound vibrations can harm us. The whole material world is based on sound vibration. Everything is within sound. Sound is condensed in the form of the gross energy we see around us. But originally everything comes out of sound. Therefore sound has all potencies within it. From sound you can create anything. And even in our dull state, being surrounded by dull material energy, still sound is what moves everything in the material world. By hearing, we learn how to utilize the energy. Without hearing, we have no intelligence. Therefore, by hearing, we learn how to see properly in order to move the material nature. Indeed, the whole modern civilization goes on simply on the basis of glorifying sense gratification. Therefore, people are absorbed in sense gratification. And when instructions are given for austerity, then people also become inclined to austerity. If austerity is glorified, then people become inclined to austerity. Whatever we hear, that's what we become inclined to do, the glories of something. We become enthusiastic to try it out with a gross body, and therefore we desire to utilize the gross body in terms of what we've heard was glorified. Similarly, those who are more advanced, they hear the glories of subtly utilizing their mind in different ways. And even more advanced, as people learn how to utilize their intelligence in subtle ways. And ultimately, the highest is to the soul to dovetail his activities in the service of Krishna, to glorify the process of devotional service. In any case, 5,000 years ago, the Kshatriyas, by performance of austerities, were able to learn how to manipulate sound vibration. Just like the Brahmanas, by the performing of austerity, by learning how to pronounce the Sanskrit language. Sometimes it would take 6 months to learn how to pronounce one letter properly. It was not such an easy task to chant the Vedic hymns properly. And not only they, in the process, they learn how to chant the Vedic hymns properly, but they would also have to go through the austerities to be able to control the senses in order to chant properly. Unless the senses are controlled, it's not possible to chant in such a subtle way as to produce the desired result. It is not that the Brahmins, simply out of lack of ability or lack of opportunity, did not engage in sense gratification, but they became qualified as Brahmins because of performing austerity. And therefore they were able to pronounce the Vedic hymns or chant them in a way that would produce an effect. Those who were in the beginning, they could chant in such a way as to give people health or wealth. And later on, their chanting became more powerful, that simply by chanting the Vedic hymns, they could produce things like elevation to the heavenly planets or other such effects. Whatever the Brahmins would chant would come into being. Sringhi chanted the mantras, even though he was a young boy, and he was able to kill Pariksha Maharaj, send a snake bird in order to bite him and kill him. Other Brahmins, for instance, chanted mantras and were able to have King Indra fall into the sacrifice. They were so powerful. But a little less important was the Kshatriyas, who also learned how to chant the mantras, but not so expertly. They could simply produce weapons. But we can imagine how sense and mind control the Kshatriyas, how much austerities they'd have to go through in order to be able to produce weapons simply out of chanting sounds. Because back then, life was simpler. It wasn't that they became Kshatriyas by playing video games. The only thing they could kill was electronic images on the screen. They'd have to go through great austerity. They also lived in the Gurukul, and they served the spiritual master. But because they were not so qualified in sense and mind control, therefore they were Kshatriyas. In any case, Ashwatthama had learned somewhat. Arjuna had also become skilled by learning from Dronacharya the art of throwing weapons by chanting mantras. That way, although Arjuna fired arrows, but the arrows were also empowered by mantras. We shouldn't think it was some kind of primitive war where they were just barbarians and they had bows and arrows shooting at each other. But the arrows were empowered, and therefore they had effects beyond what modern weapons could do. They could create mountains from chanting the weapons. They can create hurricanes. They could create so many things. And the opposing party was able to counteract the weapons also by chanting mantras. Otherwise, it would be over quite quickly, because 18 days is relatively quite quick. But in 18 days, so many millions of warriors were killed because the weapons were so powerful. Not that billions of arrows were shot. Because maybe they could shoot an arrow and that arrow could turn into millions of arrows. Like the Narayan Shastra, Astra. Arjuna, only another Brahmastra can counteract this weapon. Since you are expert in the military science, subdue this weapon's glare with the power of your own weapon. Sri Śrīdhara Gosvāmī said, hearing this from the personality of Godhead, Arjuna touched water for purification. He did Achman. And after circumambulating Lord Shri Krishna, he cast his Brahmastra weapon to counteract the other one. Seems like he had plenty of time. Wasn't in anxiety. When the weapons, rays of the two Brahmastras combined, a great circle of fire like the disk of the sun covered all outer space and the whole firmament of planets. All the population of the three worlds was scorched by the combined heat of the weapons. Everyone was reminded of the Samvartaka fire, which takes place at the time of annihilation. In other words, these weapons were quite powerful. After seeing the disturbance of the general populace and the imminent destruction of the planets, Arjuna at once retracted both Brahmastra weapons as Lord Shri Krishna desired. Arjuna not only knew the art of withdrawing his own weapon, but because when they combined together, then he could, when he withdrew his weapon, then the other weapon was automatically withdrawn also. Now Arjuna became very angry. It says, Arjuna, his eyes blazing with anger, like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. After binding Ashwatthama, Arjuna wanted to take him to the military camp. Personality of Godhead, looking on with his lotus eyes, spoke to angry Arjuna. This is the difference between Krishna and Arjuna. Arjuna has eyes like fiery copper eyes. But Arjuna, because he's angry at Ashwatthama. But Krishna's eyes are just like lotus flowers. So although his anger is transcendental. Try and become angry and have your eyes look like they're lotus flowers. Has anyone ever done that? But Krishna is angry, but because his friend Arjuna is being attacked. But still his eyes are like lotus flowers. Now Krishna is going to test Arjuna to see whether or not he's, what his mentality is like. So he says, Lord Shri Krishna said, Arjuna, you should not show mercy to releasing this relative of a Brahmana, Brahma Bandhu, for he has killed innocent boys in their sleep. They weren't exactly boys. I think they were at least 16, 17 years old. But I guess in Dwarpa Yuga, when people live for 1,000 years, if you're 16, 17 years old, you're considered a boy. Probably when you're 150, you're still considered a child. No, when you're 150, you're by that time, you're considered an adult at least. A person who knows the principles of religion does not kill an enemy who is careless, intoxicated, insane, asleep, afraid, or devoid of his chariot, nor does he kill a boy, a woman, a foolish creature, or a surrendered soul. A cruel and wretched person who maintains his existence at the cost of others' lives deserves to be killed for his own well-being, otherwise he'll go down by his own actions. In other words, Krishna is telling Arjuna, kill this rascal immediately. This is your duty, according to Shastra. I'm telling you to do it. You should immediately cut his head off. Then he says, furthermore, I personally heard you promise Draupadi that you would bring forth the head of the killer of his sons. So Krishna said, you promised Draupadi, it's according to Shastra, it's for his own good. I immediately cut off the rascal's head. So quite powerful, the personality of Godhead was standing right with you and told you to do something, gave you Shastric reference, said that you promised to do it, etc. It would be quite a compelling reason to do it. So as Arjuna, does he take out his sword and cut off the rascal's head? We'll find out in the next verse. This man is an assassin, a murderer of your own family members. Not only that, but he has also dissatisfied his master. He is but the burnt remnants of his family. Kill him immediately. Sutta Goswami said, although Krishna, who is examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, great soul, did not like the idea of killing him, although Ashwatthama was the heinous murderer of Arjuna's family members. In other words, Krishna is also in the heart, so although externally for Krishna's pastimes, he may be telling Arjuna one thing, but actually from within he was telling Arjuna something else. Therefore, Arjuna was hesitating to kill Ashwatthama, because after all, Ashwatthama was the son of his martial teacher, and we'll find out, according to the Vedic etiquette, not that as soon as you get the opportunity, you grab your enemy somehow or another, you get hold of him, and then you do with him whatever you like. After reaching his own camp, Arjuna, along with his dear friend and charioteer, Sri Krishna, entrusted the murder unto his dear wife, who was lamenting her murdered sons. Sutta Goswami said, Draupadi then saw Ashwatthama, who was bound with ropes like an animal and silent for having enacted the most inglorious murder. Due to her feminine female nature and due to her being naturally good and well-behaved, she showed him due respect as a brahmana. So, 5 minutes or some time before, she was happy to hear that Arjuna was going to come grab Ashwatthama, cut off his head. She was going to burn her son's bodies and then, taking her bath purification, stand on Ashwatthama's head. It was good in the theory, but when it came down to the practice, she was not so bloodthirsty, we could say. As soon as she saw Ashwatthama, she remembered that he was the son of their martial teacher, and therefore, being soft-hearted by nature, she didn't want to... She showed him respect as a brahmana. She could not tolerate Ashwatthama's being bound by ropes, and being a devoted lady, she said, release him, for he is a brahmana, our spiritual master. And Prabhupada's purport, he doesn't appreciate so much this activity, this attitude of Draupadi, although it's kind-hearted and soft-hearted, etc., but it doesn't show very good discrimination. Especially in the modern society, sometimes, not so much anymore, but in India, if you're born as a Brahmin, people consider that you're a Brahmin. Even you can go to Vrindavan sometimes, and the rickshaw wala, after you pay him his 5 rupees for the rickshaw drive, he'll take out his sacred thread, which he's never cleaned in the last 20 years, never washed, and he'll say, I'm a Brahmin. He's driving a rickshaw. He takes a bath once every Janmashtami. And he claims he's a Brahmin. He has none of the qualifications of a Brahmin. He doesn't perform the activities of a Brahmin. But taking birth in a Brahmin family, he imagines that he's a Brahmin. And sometimes those who lack discrimination also agree that by taking birth in a certain family, one automatically acquires that particular position. But our acharyas don't agree with that. It was by Dronacharya, now Draupadi is going to give her reasons. It was by Dronacharya's mercy that you learned the military art of throwing arrows and the confidential art of controlling weapons. He, Dronacharya, is certainly still existing, being represented by his son. His wife, Kripi, did not undergo a sati with him because she had a son. Almost fortunate one who knows the principles of religion, it is not good for you to cause grief to glorious family members who are always respectable and worshipable. My Lord, do not make this wife of Dronacharya cry like me. I am aggrieved for the death of my sons. She need not cry constantly like me. If the kingly order, being unrestricted in sense control, offends the Brahmin order and enrages them, then the fire of that rage burns up the whole body of the royal family and brings grief upon all. Being soft-hearted, Draupadi did not want to put Kripi, the wife of Dronacharya, into any kind of lamentation. And then she also points out that Kripi, being a Brahmin's wife, was also very powerful, and that if we put her into distress, her distress might affect the whole family if she curses us, etc. Just like Duryodhana, he, before the battle of Kurukshetra, his mother, Gandhari, asked him to come before him naked, because Gandhari had wrapped her eyes upon being married to Duryodhana, or to Dhritarashtra, who was blind since birth. In order to not take a superior position to her husband, she covered her eyes with cloth. And because of this austerity, she became very powerful. She thought that before the battle of Kurukshetra, I'll glance at my son's body, and I know that by my power, then his body will become just like iron. She told Duryodhana to come before her at a certain time naked. So Duryodhana was doing that. She's going to unwrap her eyes, glance at Duryodhana, and turn his body into like iron. But Krishna, being very intelligent, saw Duryodhana walking naked and said, well, what are you doing walking naked around here? This is not very nice. He said, well, I'm going to see, my mother told me to come and see her naked. So he said, at least put a loincloth on. So he did that. He put a loincloth on. And then Gandhari unwrapped her eyes, saw Duryodhana, and all the parts of his body except where his loincloth was became invulnerable. And then she realized, she said, what happened? Why didn't you come before me naked? He said, because Krishna saw me, and he told me that it would be embarrassing to be naked like this. So then she realized that Krishna had actually tricked Duryodhana, and she became so angry she was going to curse the Yadu dynasty. But Vyasadeva convinced her not to do it. Later on, after Bhima had killed all her sons, she was also going to curse the Yadu dynasty. Because although she was a woman, she was actually very powerful. Just like the sages, when the sons of Krishna went before the sages dressing Samba as a lady, as a pregnant lady, and the sages, or they asked the sages, to what will this lady give birth to? Or to whom? And the sages, becoming angry by Krishna's arrangement, said, this lady will give birth to an iron lump, which will be the destruction of your dynasty. And sure enough, unavoidably, the iron lump became the source of the destruction of the Yadu dynasty. 5,000 years ago, the curse of great personalities or their displeasure would cause great problems. So even now, we shouldn't think that when we can do anything in this material world, and if people like me or dislike me, then there's no problem. No, actually, what people like or dislike us, if they think, especially if they're devotees, if there's animosity, then Krishna, he may be obliged to make arrangements so we get the reactions for our displeasing others. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was doing the Naga Sankirtan at night, one Brahmin tried to get in, but he didn't allow everyone to come into Srivasanga. So the Brahmin, one time he was by the bank of the Ganges, and he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he started to curse him. He said that, you didn't let me into the kirtan, you're a rascal and fool, so I break my sacred thread, and I curse you that you'll have no more material enjoyment. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this curse, he began to dance in ecstasy. And then it says that anyone who hears this Brahmin's cursing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his dancing in ecstasy no longer need fear the curses of Brahmins. But still, we shouldn't take advantage of that. Siddha Goswami said, O Brahmana, King Yudhisthira fully supported the statements of the Queen, which were in accordance with the principles of religion and were justified, glorious, and full of mercy and equity, and without duplicity. Nakula and Sahadev, the younger brothers of the king, and also Satyaki, Arjuna, the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, the son of Devaki, and the ladies and all others unanimously agreed with the king. So now Krishna has taken the other side. First, he told Arjuna, kill the rascal without hesitation. He gave him so many different reasons. Don't even bother waiting till you get back to the camp. Just cut off his head now. It's for his own good and for everyone else's good. Now he's taking the side of Draupadi. Don't kill him. You know, it'll displease the family. Creepy will cry, etc. So Krishna says yes. Yudhisthira says yes. Nakula and Sahadev, they agree. Satyaki, Arjuna, everyone's agreeing with the king. Bhima, however, disagreed with them and recommended killing this culprit, who in an angry mood had murdered sleeping children for no purpose and for neither his nor his master's interest. So Bhima took the other side. Let's kill the guy right now. Chaturbhuj, the four-armed one, or the personality of Godhead, after hearing the words of Bhima and Draupadi and others, saw the face of his dear friend Arjuna, began to speak as if smiling. And our commentators, they say that Krishna manifested four arms. Because first, he had to save Arjuna from the Brahmastra, and now he had to save the whole family from killing each other. It seemed to be a quarrel breaking out in the family. So he separated Draupadi and Bhima and the rest, so they didn't get into a fight. Because it's hard imagining Draupadi fighting against Bhima, but anyway, maybe it was the other. Yeah. The personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna said, "O friend of a Brahmana who is not to be killed, a friend of a Brahmana is not to be killed, but if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. All these rulings are in the scriptures, and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill your promise to your wife. You must also act to the satisfaction of Bhima Sena and me." Just then Arjuna could understand the motive of the Lord by his equivocal orders, and thus with his sword he severed both hair and jewel from the head of Ashwatthama. So he had to kill Ashwatthama, but he shouldn't kill Ashwatthama. So he separated the hair and the jewel from the head. Seems like Ashwatthama was born with a certain jewel which made him very powerful. So he separated it. And the Kshatriyas took great pride in their hair, and if someone cut off your hair when you were Kshatriya, it was quite an embarrassment. He, Ashwatthama, had already lost his bodily luster due to infanticide, and now moreover, having lost the jewel from his head, he lost even more strength. Thus he was unbound and driven out of the camp. Cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, depriving him from his residence, are the prescribed punishments for a relative of a Brahmana. There is no injunction for killing the body. Thereafter, the sons of Pandu and Draupadi, overwhelmed with grief, performed the proper rituals for the dead bodies of their relatives. So Arjuna's promise was fulfilled, except that he didn't provide a head for Draupadi to stand up when she took her bath. Any questions? Yes. He learned from Bhargava. He learned from another Brahmin. He learned from Bhargava, Parasaram. So sometimes the Brahmins, there are different levels of Brahmanas. Sometimes they learn the military art also. To teach it, not to apply it, but to teach it to others. They were the teachers. So sometimes as teachers they learn the military art. Yes.
Is there a difference between...
Well, just to go into that, just to give you a short synopsis from the Mahabharata, that Draupadi, or Draupadi's father, Drupada, was a student at the Gurukul along with Dronacharya. And one time, Drupada, out of friendship, out of love for his friend, promised Dronacharya half his kingdom in charity. Later on, they grew up and they parted their ways. Drupada became a king of a certain region, and Dronacharya became a Brahmin. But he was so poor that one time his son, Ashwatthama, when he was at school, his friends were telling him about milk, but Ashwatthama, they were so poor that Ashwatthama had never seen milk, what to speak of tasting it. So he asked his father if he could have some milk, and then Dronacharya went to, remembering the promise of his friend, went to the kingdom of Drupada and asked Drupada for half his kingdom. And Drupada, for some reason or another, didn't take it very seriously. He said it was just some childhood promise. It didn't really mean anything. He wouldn't even give him a cow in order to give some milk to his son. So therefore, Dronacharya became very disturbed. And then he learned the military science in order to get back half his kingdom. But he didn't apply it himself and attack Drupada. Instead, when Bhishma was looking for some instructor of the martial arts, he had Dronacharya teach the Pandavas and Duryodhana, the whole company, the military science. And then as a dakshin, he had the Duryodhana attack Drupada, but Drupada defeated Duryodhana and his brothers. But then he had the Pandavas attack Drupada, and there Drupada was defeated. And he then, out of kindness, instead of taking the whole kingdom from Drupada, he gave him half the kingdom back. But Drupada became envious of Dronacharya, and he performed a sacrifice by which a kshatriya would be born that would kill Dronacharya. So out of that sacrifice came Dhrishtadyumna along with Draupadi. So Draupadi was born to destroy the kshatriya race, and Dhrishtadyumna was born to kill Dronacharya. Yes?
Sorry. Is there a difference between this read text and what we hear? Is it the same words, but is there something in the sound vibration?
Yeah, of course.
Is there some esoteric?
Esoteric? I don't know if it's esoteric.
Because the same information is in the text.
Well, it depends how you read it. If you hear from someone who knows how to read it, then that you can hear more. If you know how to read it, then you'll hear the same thing.
Is it more effective to hear it with ears than to look it with eyes?
Yes. That's what it says in the Bhagavatam. It's more effective to hear with the ears and... But of course, if you're reading with your eyes, you can also hear with your ears. But generally, to hear from someone who has some realization will be more effective. Otherwise, we hear what we want to hear. Yes?
Also, I wanted to ask that, because you mentioned that in those days they have to practice so much for getting the mantras right, but I think we don't know how to pronounce correctly the Hare Krishna mantra. So there is more mercy.
More mercy?
In Hare Krishna mantra than in mantras than in those days.
No, Krishna is equally merciful. But when we're addressing Krishna directly, since Krishna knows more or less what we're trying to say, therefore he takes the essence of what we're trying to say. Although we may not be able to pronounce mechanically the sound vibration, but Krishna doesn't. He takes the fact that we're addressing him, trying to address him. So according to our sincerity, Krishna reciprocates. But the other way, because it's not directly asking Krishna for help, instead it's taking Krishna's instructions and applying them. Therefore it depends upon the expertise of the application. Anything else? Grandharaj Srimad, thank you. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.
God.
Thank you.